Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's always a pleasure to hear Dave Solomon. Oh my gosh, what a reassuring voice he is at the beginning of this show. And seriously, I need the reassurance today. Now, let me just say this. I don't like to dwell on me so much. I certainly like to dwell on the guest, especially if the guest is here during the first hour. I've been doing this since 1976, and I can probably count on 1.5 hands how many times I seriously had a case of nerves. Today, I do, and for more than just the obvious reason. This gentleman is so astounding in his talent. Actually, I had prepared a little list of all that Gary Burton means to me. Author, innovator, mentor, mesmerizing musician, performer, pioneer, professor, iconic trailblazer in all that is jazz. The ultimate hybrid, which is very endearing to me. And then the self-confessed outsider who became so in, he's now out of sight. Gary Burton.
What an introduction.
Gary.
I hardly know how to respond after all that. Wow.
You are all of that and a bag of seriously delicious chips. So there you go.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. And I'm so honestly thrilled to have you because this weekend I immersed myself in the world of Gary Burton early on. There are some serious situations that have happened to you in these beautiful years that you've been a performer at all and one of the masters of an instrument. But honestly, until I delved into the whole Nashville aspect of you getting involved in music, having lived in Nashville twice and working part of the time with Grand Ole Opry folks, it was just a trip to read that part of your life story.
Yeah, well, people, that's the last thing you expect is that a jazz
yeah.
player would have gotten started in, of all places, Nashville, Tennessee, and that was 50 years ago as well. I mean, 1960, when jazz was pretty much confined to a handful of major cities. You know, this was before colleges had jazz programs all over the country and that sort of thing. You pretty much, the jazz scene was New York, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco, and so on. And somehow I stumbled into this great opportunity in Nashville, near where I grew up in southern Indiana. And
yeah.
One thing led to another, and I found myself out on the East Coast eventually with a record contract that I had gotten from my Nashville connections, and I was on my way.
Just beautiful, too. And I delved a little bit because we certainly had known, having been immersed in those days in Nashville music and the Nashville sound, and Chet Atkins was so responsible for that, and he absolutely loved you. I gather that Boots Randolph was part and parcel of that introduction. And then there's Hank Garland. I just read this morning that Hank Garland started on the guitar the same time you started on marimbas at the age of
yeah,
six.
I didn't know that. I knew
yeah.
he was a child prodigy. Kind of, he had his first big record when he was like in his teen years or something. But I didn't actually realize it was literally the same age. But we both had something of a similar career path there, just in different kinds of music, and we crossed paths. Interestingly enough. Just that one, you know, wild summer in 1960 in Nashville before I went off to college.
Oh my gosh! And what a cross path that was too. Just everybody exploring. Terry, wasn't that an amazing time? I mean, you're a few years older than me, but we do remember how the exploration of music was just such a natural high, wasn't it? People didn't
yes.
care about labels.
Well, and there was a phenomenon starting at that time that went on for about a decade of different types of music, different genres, crossing over, as we say. Country music, rock music, jazz music, classical music, everything was very separate, had their own audiences, their own little world, until the 60s. And that began a period of combinations and influences flowing back and forth. And I'll tell you who's very much responsible for it is the Beatles.
Mm.
I was amazed at their records by the mid-60s where, you know, we were used to making a record and we used the same musicians for the whole record and do the same more or less kind of music for the whole record. And here were Beatles records where each tune was a whole different thing. One would be some Indian sitar-style piece, and the next one would have a string quartet, and the next one would be more straight-ahead rock. The next one would have, trumpets and things. You know, they had different styles and instrumentations. And I thought that variety, that eclecticism, was really astounding, and I couldn't wait to start exploring combining different kinds of music. So, because I wanted particularly to use elements of country music and rock music in my jazz band, in my improvisations. So that's, you know, where I got my inspiration.
And golly, you know what? This started early for you. I love reading about Evelyn Tucker. Holy cow, was she a trip!
Absolutely. She was my teacher. My one and only vibraphone teacher. I studied with Evelyn for a little over 2 years until we moved to a different town and had no teacher after that. But it was a rare thing for there to be a teacher of mallet instruments back in the 50s and 60s. And I started essentially in, 1949 when I was 6 years old. And I learned first sort of light classical pieces and the standard songs that, you know, my dad would hear on the radio and buy the sheet music for. And but it turned out to be a good introduction. She was a good, solid musician and gave me a lot of the right skills so that when I was on my own, I could handle it, and keep on going. That was the important thing.
And she instilled in you, and this is what is so pivotal, I just love the idea that she was so strong and had a big, strong sense of vaudeville in her veins.
Oh, yeah.
And would always dress up the kids for their recitals and makeup. Whether you were a boy or a girl didn't make any difference. And
we had costumes as well.
We
were either in Uncle Sam outfits or
Carmen Miranda.
Carmen Miranda with big puffy sleeves and things. And she would have all the moms making the costumes for the big annual recitals. It was showbiz, my introduction to show business.
And see, you really did learn to be creative and to think on your feet. This is so amazing because she would encourage you in multiple mallets. And because there wasn't a whole lot of music for a vibraphone, I don't know how you and she got together to create music, but it instilled in you this beautiful love of real and true and fabulous multi-layered jazz. Don't you think so?
Oh, yes. That was I realized it later when I discovered jazz from finding some jazz records when I was entering my teen years, that the music I had learned from Evelyn in the form of piano music that we had to adapt in order to play it on the vibraphone. And so she taught me how to you know, figure out what harmonies were being used and how to make up little introductions and endings and things to turn these songs into a playable arrangement. And when I first heard, and it was the first jazz record I heard was Benny Goodman, an old Benny Goodman record that I had somehow stumbled onto when I was about 13 years old. I couldn't get over how exciting it was and realized that they were doing the same thing I had been doing, but instead of just doing it on little bits and pieces, they were doing it, through the whole song and able to create this wonderful energy and excitement. So I was immediately attracted to it, and I had the basic skills to quickly, learn how to do it myself.
It's just really incredible to see the evolution of your journey. It was very entertaining last night. My son was on his way back from the beach with his dad, and I was going through, this is the truth, I have 5 pages of notes of different kinds of feels from, like, say, 1975, 1976 on, going through a journey of yours and hearing elements of the vibes that I hadn't heard and the chemistry with different people. Gary, isn't it something that you would have a particular feel with a particular artist, like, say, Ralph Towner? I love your work with Ralph. There's something so simpatico with him. And then Steve Swallow, my gosh, he had been with you for years, and Pat Metheny. There's a certain kind of energy that comes with the introduction of personalities into a group. Can you think of a couple of, like, highs or high notes or hot spots where you almost felt elevated on stage working with somebody?
Well, to be honest, that happens quite regularly with my duet work with Chick Corea. That's awesome. if you ask me to single out the one musician with whom I've had the highest level of rapport, it would definitely be Chick. We've been playing together for 41 years now, and we play every year. We do some touring every year, and we make a record every 4 or 5 years. But it was there immediately. As soon as we first played a duet together impromptu at a jazz festival once, and that led us to going into a studio to record what we thought would be, one record. And because it was a little esoteric just to have a piano vibe duet without a rhythm section and without a regular band and so on. But it became quite popular, and we kept getting requests for concerts, and that began our routine of playing every year. But there's something that happens that's on a level of sort of mind reading, that we know each other so well and have such a shared common vision, I think you would say, of how we picture the music or the song that we're going to play, that once we get going, it's just like sparks flying all the time. And in the course of any evening, we have several moments where, something kind of amazing happens. We both make a similar leap to something and do it at the same time without having planned it before. Or Chick will, he's famous for this, he'll introduce something different, sort of just pull a trick on me out of the blue. And then it's, my turn to quickly adapt to it and see where it takes me and drag him along as well. And a fair amount of that goes on. I sometimes describe it, it's like having, a rapid-fire conversation with your best friend. You know each other so well that you can guess what they're about to say next a lot of the time and kind of leap ahead. And, and the conversation becomes, you're very energized when you know each other that well. And that was true, like I said, from the beginning with Chick. So we had some kind of just natural empathy. And I have great rapport with a half a dozen or more other players that I've played with a lot over the years, Pat Metheny, Makoto Ozone, and Ralph Towner, you mentioned before. These are all players that I have played regularly with over extended periods of time and feel very comfortable with. But there's something about Chick that just is on another level. Like there's that old joke about you finding an amp that goes up to 11. And this is a kind of rapport that goes up to 11. It's just beyond the usual maximum.
Yeah, and you know, as you describe it, it occurs to me, and here's a phrase that's not particularly used when it's come to a musical partnership, but a marriage. There is an equal yoking of you two. There is a level of artistry, and then there is an intellectual pursuit of the beauty of music, and there's the passion that the music makes you feel, and there's all of that with you and Chick. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, and you do. You strive to make sure that all of those capabilities of what music can convey are included, and you feel really good about it when you stop and listen back to one of your recordings and can say, yes, it's got everything that's supposed to be there. All the elements are working. And it's never 100% perfect all the time. You know, every gig, every recording is another attempt to do as well as you can and hope for a high level of accomplishment, but it's different from night to night. I always tell myself, don't get panicked on any one gig, because if you look at the big picture, this is probably my 4,019th gig that I've played in my life, and most of them have gone pretty well, so I'm not going to get uptight and panicked if one seems to be a struggle. But it will vary from night to night. I'm sure it's the same way with actors in a play or something.
Yeah.
There's human nature. There are so many variables when you walk out on a stage. You just don't know what's going to happen. And sometimes it's unexpected. You're sick with the flu, and you've been up for 20 hours traveling because your plane was delayed, and you walk out on the stage and you have one of the best nights of the year.
And absolutely.
Other nights, all the conditions are perfect, and it's just an okay night. There's no way to predict how these things are going to go.
Well, I never thought about using this term before, but you just explained something and a light bulb moment went off. We always talk about on this show the technical perfection that some artists have, and it's greatly appreciated. All of us could revel in the absolute workmanship of what somebody is able to do on stage, but unless there is that balance that also includes the ring of truth, it almost means nothing. And you've always had that ring of truth. And I would imagine there are some nights, Gary, where you're on stage and maybe in the corner of your mind you might be stressing about something that's taking place, but here is this breakthrough truth that happens when you're on stage and you go, oh, I was fretting needlessly because this was supposed to happen.
Well, when you're playing on stage, you're relying a lot on your well-trained instincts and intuitions, which really guide most of the playing. I often compare this to, for instance, how we speak. You don't think about nouns and verbs and how sentences are structured when you talk to someone. You just picture what you want to talk about, and the sentences kind of appear in your mind, but they're forming in your unconscious mind, which has, a nice storehouse of vocabulary and the rules of grammar and can put the words into, proper sentences and so on. Well, we do the same thing when we improvise. The unconscious mind actually does most of the work. And as the melody phrase kind of crosses over into our conscious mind, we play it, just like we speak a sentence as it comes into our mind. And when you have done this, you know, for a while, it feels very automated, and you kind of mentally, consciously, you kind of take a step back from it and watch this inner player take over and play the song and take the solo and everything. And as long as you don't get in the way, you know, things really work out great. And I know that makes it sound like it's an easy thing, but it is the way everybody plays, because there's no way we can consciously make all these thousands of split-second decisions about how to play our instruments and how to play the notes and the music. There's so many things to juggle that there's no way the conscious mind can think about that many things. But the unconscious mind is amazing at the way it can do that in everyday things like speech and not so everyday things like improvising.
And it's amazing then, with what you have said, that you have been able to find those particular musicians that you assemble together who get that concept. For example, the new Gary Burton Quartet guided tour. You have some unbelievable people around you who you, bless your heart, you are so generous in allowing them to shine. And especially with Julian, what a treat he is to listen to, Gary. Oh
absolutely.
My gosh.
I met Julian through seeing him on a television show. He was on the Grammy telecast when he was 12 years old as part of a little segment promoting music education. And he played for about 20 seconds in this little group of kids. And I thought, wow, what a natural, comfortable player he is, this little kid. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I called up and found out who he was and got in touch with him and his parents. And we started playing together a few times a year at first, where I could find some low-key performance situations where he could come and play with us. And by the time he was 15, we made our first record together. And then we started touring when he was 17 and was finishing high school and went on to college. And now he's 25, so I've known him for, 12 years already now. And he's become such a mature and well-rounded player. He's very original. He's absolutely skilled in every possible way. And one of the most interesting and warm-hearted people you'll ever meet as well.
Oh.
So we have a really good rapport and a long-established collaboration. And finding the rhythm section, Antonio Sanchez and Scott Colley, to join the group when I first put the group together 2.5 years ago, I didn't know at the time what a great combination it was going to be. I just thought it would be a fun group, and we would do one tour together. That was the game plan at first, was to do a month in Europe. And it was the suggestion of my manager. Says, well, why don't you do something with Julian and put a group together and book some concerts. By the time we came back, I was so excited about the way this group played. The chemistry between the four of us was just a terrific balance of personalities and styles and abilities. So we made our first record and then toured some more the next year, the following year. It was called Common Ground. And then it was time to go around again. So we made our new record, Guided Tour, and we've started touring. For that record, we did already a month in Europe in the spring, and now we're going to be touring a month around the U.S. in starting next week, actually, in Washington. D.C.
Yes.
is the first gig.
You are coming to Blues Alley, and many of us from the Baltimore, Philly, actually, area of Virginia will be gathered to see you. Oh, my
Great.
Gosh. We're looking so forward to that. And I know that we had said 30 minutes, and I cannot Let You Escape Without Talking About Learning to Listen, The Jazz Journey of Gary Burton. This is your autobiography. You wrote this. Now, there was a couple of times when you had a little gap in time, but you took notes through the years. You put it down. You came back to it. And a lot of this was written in a Los Angeles hotel room, which I find fascinating.
Well, I kept wanting to do this, and I could get started on it, but I kind of would bog down after, you know, kind of getting writing about my early years. Around the time where I became a band leader myself, I was 24 then, I couldn't seem to figure what direction to take the story and how to arrange it and so on. And finally, after a decade of kind of looking at it every now and then and kind of messing with it, I had a week off in Los Angeles and decided to just check into a hotel and stay there instead of coming home. And I realized that was a chance to try working on this book again. And got started and just kept on going. And by the end of the week, I had a first draft. And that was like 2.5-3 years ago. And at that point, I just started rewriting, fine-tuning, adding, subtracting, you know, et cetera, as you do with a book. That's when it turns out that's the real work, is where you the stuff you have to put in after you've got the first sketch of what's gonna be in the book. But I'm quite excited about it because most jazz biographies are not written by the musician. They're based on taped interviews, and a professional writer writes the book. And you get a lot of, you know, certainly direct quotes and the life story of the musician, but I wanted it to be in my own voice as much as possible and really be my own work if I could pull it off. And I was prepared to change approach if I felt I was, you know, bungling it. But, you know, I kept at it, and I had a great editor, a friend of mine who's a jazz writer, who helped me with how to lay things out. Sometimes he would say, well, this anecdote probably goes better in chapter 3, and this section here seems like it's a repeat of an earlier part. You might want to combine them. He had wonderful suggestions for how to improve the organization of the manuscript. And then finally, it's out. You know, I've never had a project take so long to get to completion. I mean, records, you generally finish them in a week, and then 3 to 6 months later, they come out, and they're still, you know, fairly fresh on your mind. But a book is a slower thing. It takes longer to write it to begin with, and then there's a fairly slow speed of how publishing moves compared to record companies. So it feels like I've, you know, been in labor for 3 years to get this thing finally off the launch pad. But I'm thrilled with the response I've been getting so far from fans and from reviewers as well. There have been some really nice articles in the New York Times, in the Miami Herald, and other papers around the country, the Detroit Free Press, Boston Globe, and so on, that, you know, are very complimentary about the book and makes me feel like it's going to be well received as it gets out to the public.
Oh, Gary, let me just say this as one person crying in the wilderness and actually crying, because it's so fluid. The writing style is so fluid that you are hungering for the next page. And then for some of us who feel the emotional connection, and in ways that we hadn't counted on, actually, and I guess I'm speaking for a lot of people, the courage that you have on so many of those pages and the fearlessness that you've acquired, you must feel as though at the age of 70 you have a new lease on life. You must feel that way.
I do kind of feel that way. I mean, this past decade since I retired from my fairly lengthy career in music education, where the last 10 years I was running Berklee College of Music as the executive vice president, and when I retired and moved to Florida, it was like starting a new phase in my life and my career, and I think of it as my last phase. You know, there was the early years, then there was the middle years where I juggled teaching and playing, and now I'm in my, third phase, my senior years and so on. But so much great stuff has happened. I just got married.
I know you did. Best wishes to you. That's wonderful.
You. Jonathan and I have been together for 8.5 years now, and decided with all the excitement about marriage equality that it was a good time for us to make it official, and we did this summer on vacation up in Massachusetts, and it feels great, and so I'm having the time of my life, I have to tell you. I feel like one of the luckiest people in the world.
Well, I have to tell you, my friends Valerie and Emily just got married in T-Town, and they had a time of it because, you know, the parking situation, Gary, up there is a little bit crazy.
Yes,
so,
never bring a car.
Right. So Emily got hit with a big bill for tickets. So she wrote to the townspeople, and you know what?
Yeah.
They sent her $500 check back to her and said, best wishes, we understand.
That is so great.
Isn't that great?
You gotta love the I have several friends from Boston who ultimately moved to Provincetown, in the last few years. And so we try to go every summer for a week or so to visit, and just love the place. It's got such a nice, quaint character to it, and it sounds just like what P-Town would do.
Yes.
Get their money back. That's a great story.
It really is, and thank you so much. You know, not only for the time today, but thank you for a couple of things. These are just personal things. Thank you for loving Carla Bley. That's one
yeah.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
I love her so much.
Yeah.
And thank you for being among the first, if not the first, to focus on the duality or the singularity of an instrument as time evolved with music. I mean, you were there, a pioneer in multiple ways, and I appreciate that so much about you because you've opened doors for other people that they didn't think they had a knob to.
Well, I hope that's the way it's working out for a lot of people. I would feel really nice if I knew that that my example and my influences have been helpful to a lot of people along the way. I think so. People tell me that that's happened for them, and it always makes me feel good to hear it.
Well, case in point, you met one of our hometown heroes the other day at the Detroit Jazz Festival, Warren Wolf, who was shaking his shoes.
We played together. We played together and had a lot of fun. And I just posted a picture of Warren and I on my Facebook page that we took that afternoon at Detroit. He's a great guy and really wonderful player. I think he's going to be the next major vibraphone star in the decades ahead. I'm really impressed with his playing.
You just gave me a chill. Wait till he hears that you said that. Thank you so much, Gary.
I told him directly.
Did
but,
you?
I don't know if he believed me or not. Anyway, I think that's what's in store for Warren. He's a super talent.
Well, what's in store for Gary Burton is even more success. This book is going to do phenomenally well. So is Guided Tour. And I wish you the best on these upcoming tour dates. And we'll see you, and we'll absolutely have a hug-a-thon when we see each other.
Okay. Well, it's been great talking to you, Trish. And,
it's been great talking to you, Gary.
See you in Washington then.
Very good. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Gary Burton, what a treat. Oh, my gosh. It was so beautiful to be able to call a little bit early just to make sure he was there because, hey, look, you remember on Thursday what happened with the audio on Blog Talk Radio, but all was well today. And I wanted to make sure that you heard a taste of the new Gary Burton Quartet. And I wanted to play a song that has some meaning for Gary. There's rarely anything he does that doesn't have meaning. This is from Guided Tour. It's actually a song that pinpoints his life, although it's not necessarily his composition. He may have had some input. This is called Legacy on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz. Just love the men, love the music. That's an individual who can buy and sell all of us from now until 2017. Seriously, laughing still all the way to the bank, and I'll tell you why. I just found this out. This is so hot, I can't believe it. First of all, Smokey Robinson from 1979, from Where There's Smoke, There's Fire, Cruisin', one of the hottest songs for that year. Just can't describe how hot that song was. Mercy. And as someone who can attest to what he's like in concert, after having seen him earlier this year, I have told a number of people, Smokey is what? He's in his 70s now, and the sexiest man I've ever seen on stage. There is no question about it. Everybody needs to take a page from what he does. And in actuality, you can't really do that because nobody is going to be like him. But every woman that was with a partner that night, the partner got lucky. There's no question about it. My friend Allison and I were even looking at each other funny because we were thinking about it. No, just kidding. But that's what the kind of night it was. It was just, well, smoking. Here's the thing. First, Smokey just paid tribute to his great friend, Maxine Powell. That name may not ring a bell to you, but she was pivotal in Motown's success in the early years. Maxine was the person who got all of these young acts coming into that little house in Detroit and classed them up if they needed it. Some didn't really. She would tell them how to dress, how to talk, how to walk even sometimes, how to conduct themselves in business, makeup, hair. She was amazing. And she was part of the prosperity and the power that Motown had. She just passed away a few weeks ago in her 90s. She would really never tell her age. And Smokey said she was just as important as any of the writers and artists there. And he's absolutely right. Smokey's going to be on BBC Radio Live on the 8th of September, coming up in mere days. And here's the thing that's mind-blowing. A new album is coming out. It's a duets album. Smokey was just signed in March by David Foster to Verve Records. And guess who the producer is? Randy Jackson of American Idol fame. We were wondering what he was going to do after he left the show, and now we do. That's going to be some kind of marriage made in heaven. That's phenomenal. Woo, good news. Carla Bley on piano, and her longtime companion, bassist Steve Swallow, who is one of Gary Burton's best friends and has collaborated with him on a number of efforts. It just seemed right to play Gary Burton and then into Carla Bley and Steve Swallow. Just beautiful. Carla is 77, one of the other amazing pioneers in jazz, for sure. They recorded Go Together in the summer of 1992. Carla, being a pianist, she is also a composer and a band leader, and just a great story. Here she was, a teenager, not knowing a whole lot. She had moved to New York City, and she was a cigarette girl at Birdland. And she was just digging all the jazz vibes there, and she met Paul Bley. And one legend gave birth to another legend. Their marriage didn't last, but she kept his name, and Paul encouraged her to get involved in music, and she just made the earth turn for a number of folks through the years. Fleur Carnivore is the song that we heard from Go Together, and that was also the name of the album that was made in 1988 in Copenhagen, a live album. Steve Swallow still kicking too, and I'm sure that he's enjoying the success of his friend Gary Burton, newfound personal happiness and newfound success in professional endeavors too. So I am blissed out over Gary. I'm just blessing God that that turned out to be so well. And Gary, again, is going to be at Blues Alley in the next several days. Make sure you go to bluesalley.com and find out more about that. I promised a friend of ours that I wasn't going to play his song until the second hour of the show. We're almost there, but we're going to go into another song set so we can pump up the energy a little bit and focus on some birthdays. One we didn't get to the last couple of times on the show, we're going to make sure that birthday is noted. Let's go back in the day. It was Horace Silver's birthday yesterday. He is 85 years old. He is still cooking to a certain degree. This was from 1965. The absolute identifiable musical source next to Horace Silver is the project called Song for My Father. The Natives Are Restless, the name of this track on Hybrid Jazz. Enjoy.
we're cozy and clinging. Well, sir, all I can say is if I were a bell, I'd be ringing. From the moment we kiss goodnight, that's the way I just gotta behave. And if I were a lamp, I'd light. Or if I were a banner, I'd wave. Ask me how do I feel, little me, with a quiet upbringing. Well, sir, all I can say is if I were a gate, I'd be swinging. And if I were a watch, I'd start popping my spring. Oh, and if I were a bell, I'd go ding, dong, ding, dong, ding. Ask me how do I feel from this chemistry lesson I'm learning. Well, sir, all I can say is if I were a bridge, I'd be burning. Well, I knew my morale would crack from the wonderful way you look. Boy, if I were a duck, I'd quack. Or if I were a goose, I'd be cooked. Ask me how do I feel now that we're fondly caressing. Pal, if I were a salad, I know I'd be splashing my dressing. Or if I were a season, I'd surely be spring. Yes, and if I were a bell,
ladies and gentlemen, that was some kind of set right there. And to top it off, woo, Dinah Washington, mercy. Bluesy, jazzy, swinging, soulful, full of that soulful mercy. Had a birthday, and we remembered that on the 29th of August. If I Were a Bell is from the 50s, originally from a work called In the Land of Hi-Fi, and then on the complete Dinah Washington on Mercury Records from 1954 to 1956. Check it out. Cannonball Adderley. Oh, man. Junior Mance on piano. Some of the cats that were grooving back then were just getting their start. But this chickette, she was flying high. Oh, my gosh. And that song is so cool. That was originally from Guys and Dolls, 1950, thereabout, the musical. Written by Frank Lesser, and it was one of those joyful songs that Dinah Washington gave new breath to, but it was also done by Miles Davis. Now, going back, if you remember the final episode of The Cosby Show, if you remember, it was Bill and Felicia, it was Cliff and Claire dancing off the stage past the fourth wall that was the imaginary wall during the show, to the Miles Davis version of that song. Cliff had been ringing the doorbell so that it would play at a certain time, and that's how they ended the show. So I don't know why that song came to mind, but I was thinking about that and laughing. Have to laugh these days. Can't do the other. Mike MacArthur, we heard from in that middle song there. Mike MacArthur and his take on the Horace Silver song, Filthy McNasty. Horace did this on Doing the Thing, the name of the LP, back in 1961. And on that track, in case you recognized any of the playing, some of you sharper folks are going to remember that some pretty high-profile friends were on this CD by Mike MacArthur, Feels Like Home. On that track, it was Mike on tenor sax, Rick Braun on trumpet, Brian Brumberg on acoustic bass, Alex Acuna on percussion, Frank Third Richardson on drums, and Jeff Lorber on piano. So, no lightweights, any of those folks. That's why it was so kicking. Then Horace Silver himself to top off that high energy little swing set there, and an homage to, or homage if you prefer, John Tavares Silver. And Song from My Father on Blue Note Records. That was the quintet there, The Natives Are Restless, featuring Carmel Jones and Joe Henderson, Teddy Smith, and Roger Humphreys. If you go to HoraceSilver.com, you'll find out a thing or two about this great legend. And I was thinking about Gary Burton because it takes an awful lot for someone who is still working to write about themselves. Horace Silver also wrote an autobiography called Let's Get to the Nitty Gritty, and you can find out how to get your mitts on that at the website. Good stuff. I'm a little bit high because of Gary. That was a solid Ted, enough said, 30 minutes or so. I loved it. I promised a friend of mine that I would play this song. He was all pumped. The other night, I was on GHP Radio with Gary Fustin and company, and in the chat room was Sam Hankins. So he and I corresponded a little bit there, then a little bit after we got off the show. It was a really, really good time, and I appreciate everybody concerned, including Mr. Ray here in the chat room and Griselda and the Soul Stringer. It was fun. Sam Hankins has a brand new single. It's called Are You Serious? Which is how I reacted when I heard that Terrence Howard was going to play Nelson Mandela. Don't get me started. This is Sam Hankins. Are You Serious? On Hybrid Jazz. Man, is this a kick and a half. Check it out.
Não posso mais, é que saudade do Brasil, vontade que eu tenho de voltar. Adeus América, essa terra é muito boa, mas não posso ficar porque o samba mandou me chamar. O samba mandou me chamar. Não posso mais, é que saudade do Brasil, vontade que eu tenho de voltar. Adeus América, essa terra é muito boa, mas não posso ficar porque o samba mandou me chamar. Digo adeus ao boogie, oogie, oogie, boogie, swing também. Chega de rock, fox, trots, hipnotes, que isso não me convém. Vou voltar pra cuíca, bater na barrica, tocar tamborim. Chega de light, alright, de fight, good night. Isso não dá mais pra mim. O samba mandou me chamar. O samba mandou me chamar. Posso mais, é que saudade do Brasil, vontade que eu tenho de voltar. Adeus América, essa terra é muito boa, mas não posso ficar porque o samba mandou me chamar. O samba mandou me chamar. Eu digo adeus ao boogie, oogie, oogie, boogie, swing também. Chega de rock, fox, trots, hipnotes, que isso não me convém. Vou voltar pra cuíca, bater na barrica, tocar tamborim. Chega de light, alright, de fight, good night. Isso não dá mais pra mim. O samba mandou me chamar. O samba mandou me chamar. O samba mandou me chamar. O samba me chamar. O samba mandou me chamar.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the real deal. Oh, yes, it is. Fernanda Cunha from Rio lives in Sao Paulo and has a CD called Coração do Brasil. That's called Adios America. Just wanted to say all of that. Mostly all Brazilian musicians on this. And you get tickled when you talk to some of these American artists, because when you talk about who is hot in Brazil and who has inspired them in the way of Brazilian music. And these women especially who sing in Portuguese, it's like intoxicating. EC3 comes to mind because if you talk to him about Brazil, his eyes glaze over. So I had to play EC3 next to Fernando Cunha, a respected singer, by the way, on three continents. And a little reminiscent of the late and great Elis Regina, who died far too soon in her 30s. If we ever get a chance to see Fernanda in these parts, it will just be absolutely lovely. It would be really fabulous to get a coalition of American artists and Brazilian together to do some kind of big jazz fest, you know, the real good stuff. Let me go on. EC3, it's all about the rhythm, his new CD, Ojos de Rejo, Red Eye, Pink Eye, something along those lines. The late, great Cedar Walton wrote that song. Beautiful. Love it. And just so you know the personnel on this, Janelle Gill on piano. So amazing, this one. Michael Bowie on bass, who was our guest on Hybrid Jazz not that long ago. Of course, EC3 on drums. Dominique Patrick Noel on percussion. And let's see, tenor sax, Teddy Baker, Arch A.T. Thompson on flute. And EC3 and Teddy took their solos on sax and drums, respectively. Let us just tell you this. There are two dates for those in the region that you want to get tickets for. This Thursday is going to be a little crowded. A lot of folks that we know are going to be playing around the region. EC3 and company will be at Blues Alley for two shows. That's going to be monumental. And then EC is coming back into the region. You know, he was born and raised in Italy, came to Las Vegas, but he's back and forth to D.C. all the time. In early October, it's going to be a very sweet deal. He will be at Germano's Trattoria, where he was last time he was in town. He'll have Micah Chevalier with him, yes. And I'll be doing Hybrid Jazz live at the club that day. That will be the first time we'll have ever have done a show from a venue. So hope everything goes well. I'll get some pointers along the way to see how it does go. And we started off that set with Sam Hankins, Oklahoma-born, Chicago popular. Oh, is he ever. Trumpeter, composer, band director, educator, sought-after sideman who has shared the stage with Al Jarreau and Aretha, the OJs, the Temptations. I could go on. SamHankinsMusic.com has more information. Are You Serious? The name of that track. And I thank you, Sam. He's listening, and he just wrote me the sweetest letter. He's just on it. In his busy day, he's taken the time to listen to the show. We talked a little bit on GHP radio with a cast of phenomenal characters last Thursday night. It was a ball. And Gary was really generous with how he shared the stage, and we're going to have Gary and Gino Goss on, and we're going to have Sam Hankins, who was part of the chat room last Thursday, because he's a fascinating guy. Interesting story or two or 300 to pass along. So there's power behind that trumpet in more ways than one. And we'll find out what makes Sam Hankins tick as soon as we can get that signed, sealed, and delivered. We had Gary Burton on during the first hour of the show, and it was absolutely lovely. He's amazing, and here's what he said before the show started. In his book, which is a great book, his autobiography, he talks about how scared he was when he was a little guy, 5 or 6, and his parents knew that he had something special. They took him to this amazing lady named Evelyn Tucker, who in this smaller town in Indiana, she was a teacher, had vaudeville in her blood, a marimba and vibes teacher. What are the chances of that? So she took to Gary, but Gary was scared of her, and he didn't even say a word. Didn't want his first lesson, didn't say a word. When I spoke to Gary before the show today, I said to him, I'm just like you, meeting Evelyn Tucker for the first time. And he laughed and said, Trish, it's me. This will be so easy, you won't believe it. And it was. He's amazing. One of the people that he has affected so strongly in his life was a teenager that came to him at Berkeley as a jazz apprentice. Actually, he was a teaching assistant, Pat Metheny. Pat and Gary worked so closely together. Pat honed his craft so well under the tutelage of Gary Burton that the rest, of course, you know, is history. Pat just celebrated his 59th birthday in August. This is going back to his debut from 1975, 1976 or so. Bright Size Life with Jaco Pastorius on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you. said to you that I've never known a love as wonderful as the love you give to me. Have I said to you that my life has changed since you have been right here, sharing every day and night with me? I want you to know you mean the world to me. There is nothing I would rather do than spend my days and nights in love with you. Pray my actions and my words will show. With all my heart, I want you to know. With you a love that will outlast the sun that warms the sky. On this vow you can rely. Can I share with you a loving home where we can build a family?
Love our homegrown talent. Can we just say that again and again? One of the Baltimore beloveds we have in our midst, celebrating his birthday in the next couple of days, that was Mark Evans, the son of a vocalist and saxophonist who got together with his good friend Elliot Levine, who you just heard on keyboard there, and wrote a song called I Want You to Know. Woo! So beautiful. This song was also on Mark's solo album, The First 7 Years. And man, the two of them together are pretty formidable. An unlikely duo when you see them, but man, and both of them have so much work separately, they rarely get to see each other. But this was on Elliot's album, The Funk, The Whole Funk, and nothing but the funk. That was back in 2004, just full of what you would expect, and then songs like this with that delicious vibe where you just want to get busy. You know what I mean? Yeah, I think you do. Just so you know, Mark is one of those guys in Baltimore that doesn't spend a whole lot of time in town because he is huge across the pond doing house music and rhythm and blues. In some parts of the world, they consider him godlike. And that's the way people figure with Elliot, too, because Elliot has toured with Wilson Pickett and also currently is with Heatwave doing his thing, playing keyboards for that group. You heard Elliot, along with Christian DeMasones and Jared, not that long ago. They were all getting ready for Christian's, or a.k.a. Big New York's party in Virginia. They are all just doing their own separate thing and doing so well. Jared was on the show with us a week or so ago. It was just great to hear from him. Elliot's getting airplay on some of these beautiful radio-inspired outlets across the world. There's a show that's happening in Scotland. Elliot always likes to tell me when he's getting played. He pops up a note on Facebook for me. It's very cool. We heard, too, from Pat Metheny, the youngest teacher that ever was at the University of Miami, and then he became the youngest teacher ever at Berklee College, where he studied under Professor Gary Burton. That was his from his debut album at the age of 21 when he was 19. It was 1976, and on fretless bass, it was Jaco Pastorius, Bob Moses on drums. Bright Size Life. It sure has been, Pat, hasn't it? Man alive, he has had such success. Just turned 59 and just taking a breather. Yeah. If you go to patmetheny.com, you'll learn a whole lot more. It's visually accosting to see what's happening with Pat Metheny. Fortunate Action, the name of Alex Snydman's CD. Yeah, enjoy the name of that song that you heard. Alex is going to have his own birthday coming up on the 9th, and he is a drummer, he is a teacher, he's fast and furiously trying to wrap things up at Cal Arts to get his MFA. He was on the show, and it was a beautiful occasion. Then I got a chance to see him at Andy Music, and it was just a sweet little assembly of talent. Oh, it's so wonderful when these folks pop on the show and we can turn you on to all these independent artists who are just breathtaking in their scope. More about that. Let us tell you, now that we have our third hour of the show, Cooking with Gas, we didn't make a big deal about this because it's usually the case that the first Tuesday of the month, it's about artists who have projects, who have CDs, gigs, whatever the case may be. So I didn't emphasize it too much. And then we had Gary Burton during the first hour of the show. Usually, artists call during that first hour. But let's just throw caution to the wind. If anybody wants to call, you're a jazz artist and you've got something that you want to make sure that we know about, 323-843-6172. 323-843-6172, the number to call. Just share with us and we'll have a little group therapy session, okay? Here's Dale Williams. This is such a cool sound from Heaven's Got the Blues, California Blues, on Hybrid Jazz. Enjoy. Something by the group from the Jazz Samba Project, in case you haven't heard about this. Such a wonderful little compilation of tunage. One of my favorite words. Stan Getz and Charlie Bird, back in the day, they decided to do something really amazing. So they wanted to record Jazz Samba in Washington, D.C., at a Unitarian church. And Jazz Samba Project is the sort of reinvention or re-inspiration or making sure that everyone knows what happened on that particular day back in 1962. Lynn and Ken and the guys just wanted to do something really special. And nobody else could really sort of combine the kinds of magic that took place, except for Verano, because Lynn has a full appreciation of different kinds of music, being French-Canadian. She's married to Ken, who is British. They met in Switzerland. They have a vast repertoire of knowledge of and performance of different kinds of songs. So they got some like-minded individuals together. For example, Alejandro Lucchini on percussion for all tracks, and Jim McFalls on trombone, and Jeff Antoniak on tenor sax, and the result is just really delicious. Just you have it in mind that Verano maybe could get together with Fernanda Cunha that we heard earlier, and EC3, and have this amazing Baltimore-DC combination festival where every everybody knew the music back in the day and also knew how to recreate contemporary sounds based on that inspiration. I just get high thinking about it. Just so you know, Verano is going to be at Bistro Le Pic and the Carlisle Club, don't you know? As is our friend, by the way, Tracy Hamlin. She's going to be there this Sunday. Also, Lynn and Ken and company at Twins Jazz. That's going to be, I believe, in October. And then Ken Avis is doing a workshop on guitar at the Strathmore. All this made available to you at veranomusic.com. You heard the Antonio Carlos Jobim song Meditation from Jazz Samba Project. Brian O'Neill, worker bee. Rascal, musician and humanitarian, I'll say. From 2007, from Daisy, inspired by his grandmother that was mesmerized. One of those wonderful tunes that infiltrates your being and you cannot forget it. DoFoundation.net. If you have not had a chance to go there, please do, because it shows what kind of work that Brian and his amazing staff, including the wonderful Kelly, are doing to stop homelessness in this country. They are adamant about it, and they are trying to reach every town and create a Do Foundation in every city where homelessness is a real big nightmare, honestly, for everybody involved. It's just a real psychological situation. A real tragedy, of course, and nobody knows that more than our friend Norman Woods. We've got to get Norman back on the show. What do you think, chat room? I think we should have Inside back here. It's time. We also heard Dale Williams. Phew. The South Side of Chicago turned D.C. resident turned Cali native. California Blues from Heaven's Got the Blues that was released earlier this year. Sideman for LL Cool J and Howard Hewitt and Brandy. Learned a lot of lessons along the way. Played with Sun Ra and Gene Karn back in the 70s, so I'm sure that he and Tony Bunn crossed paths. That's a really funky but just beautiful vibe song, California Blues. Dale Williams, Heaven's Got the Blues, the name of that CD. We might end a little early today. No sweat. We'll take care of business. And by the way, if you are craving hybrid jazz from Trish Hennessy during the week, our good friend Brett at bluesjazzradio.com has it on from 9 to noon or thereabouts on weekdays. Isn't that nice? I love that. Thank you, Brett. Let us play something for you that has been a long time in getting played. Back and forth with those that are in a position to say yes or no. Finally, Dre said yes. This is a band that is based out of Florida. You might have heard of these guys. You may not have heard of them. Levi and Rex and Giovannis and Ivan. They are collectively known as Level 10. This is a song called Imagine That. It is really honking. Just love it. On Hybrid Jazz. Check it out. This is Hybrid Jazz.
Thank you.
Funny, everybody is going through their little challenges in the chat room, but when George Benson's voice came on, it was like, oh, we all took a chill pill. Oh my gosh, you know what, this needs to be a Lifetime movie, what happens in the chat room during the show. Man, never mind, we'll get to that later. We're working on the script, just so you know, gals and guys. George Benson from 1985. Oh, my. That was such a song. 2020 was such a musical project. If you remember, now go back, Roberta Flack, You Are the Love of My Life on that song. And you know what else was on there? Do you remember that song that did so well, Nothing's Gonna Change My Love for You by Glenn Medeiros? Originally, it was on 2020 with George Benson. That one, the favorite from the CD for our money, for sure. I Just Want to Hang Around You. Man, if you relate to that song, you relate to it big time, because honestly, that's all you want to do sometimes. Last night in this tawdry little show that ABC has running as part of its summertime programming, Mistresses, one of the characters is dabbling in alternative sexuality practices. I'll just leave it at that. So she says to the girlfriend that she thought she wanted to be with but found out that maybe she didn't want to go in that direction, she said, "All I wanted to do was hang out with you, and I would have done whatever it took so that we could hang out." And it was sweet, too complicated, kind of crazy, but that's sometimes all you want to do. You just want to hang out with somebody and be a part of their world because they're just so magnetic to you. And to be in their sunlight means everything. So apparently that's what the message was there. It's in George Benson's voice, isn't it? It is. We heard, too, from Gary Burton. And I wanted to play something from, certainly, Guided Tour, the new Gary Burton Quartet. He has mentored Julian Lage for such a long time now, several years, since Julian was a young boy, just absolute prodigy on that guitar. Julian is now 25 and has turned out to be this remarkable human being. If you dig through YouTube, you'll see that there is an Academy Award-nominated film all about Jules. That's his nickname. When he was a little guy, his family knew that he had something special. So cameras followed him around for a while. This precocious little boy has turned out to be this kind and amazing and very generous young man. And you heard a lot of his guitar work on The Lookout from Guided Tour. Gary Burton was real generous in making sure that those who surrounded him in the way of musicianship got a turn. Scott Colley on bass got his turn. Antonio Sanchez on drums got his. And Julian will no doubt have a little spotlight or two when Gary Burton comes to Blues Alley in the next several days. Very exciting. Woo! Also, we heard from Level 10. Level 10, the number, band.com, has more. Imagine that, the name of the single. Levi DeAndrade, Rex Freely, hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Levi on piano, Rex on sax, Yovanis Roque on bass, and Ivan Diaz Avila on drums. Level 10 incorporates world music, Brazilian, samba, funky jazz, poppy. It's this wonderful little dessert hybrid. It just sounds like dessert. I gave Dre a little taste of what my feeling was as far as the music is concerned, and it sort of redefines contemporary jazz. It's that you open up a door to a room that you've never been in, and whoo, this beautiful gust of wind just takes you. And that's what it reminded me of. Level 10, the name of the band. And imagine that. Imagine that. And T just came home from campus. Yay! Just walked through the door. Phew. We heard, too. What did we hear from? Level 10, Gary Burton, his new Gary Burton Quartet. And we heard George Benson. And we have time to do another song. I wanted to play three from Gary. And this song does not get covered enough. This is one of those songs. We played Rick Braun earlier. He was on the CD with Mike MacArthur, Feels Like Home. And Rick had his own solo project last year where he got to sing. Some of those songs that he was singing are part of the childhood that Rick and I had growing up in Pennsylvania. We remembered these beautiful songs that just took our breath away. And the same thing happened to Gary Burton growing up in Indiana. he heard this beautiful Michel Legrand song at one point. Michel wrote this along with Johnny Mercer and Eddie Barclay. And Gary just felt this song powerfully. Once Upon a Summertime from Guided Tour.
Thank you.
Now you know why. This man is a multiple Grammy Award winner. Man alive. Isn't that choy stuff? I don't know what to say. You know, how is it possible, and I won't get over this for a long time thinking about it, how is it possible that growing up in a town like, I don't know, where is that town? A little town in Indiana, and I should have this memorized at this point, but I don't. He was living in a particular town which was farm territory, actually. What are the chances of a Midwestern town having a vibes and marimba teacher? Come on now. That's so crazy. But he did, and he took lessons, and Gary Burton turned out to be this incredible legend in jazz that nobody saw coming. And not only has he become this legend as far as playing is concerned and his mentorship, his wonderful teaching abilities, because after all, in 1971, he became a teacher. Then, in 1985, this is at Berkeley, he became the dean of curriculum. In 1989, he got his honorary doctorate. And then in 1996, he became the executive vice president of Berkeley. This is a man of rare intelligence and gifts that are more than meets the eye. And then on top of that, he, because it's part and parcel of what was required of boys, certainly, when they were growing up in that time, he got married a couple of times, had kids. And through that past couple of decades, struggled with being gay and whether that was something that he wanted to discuss or not discuss. And then when he was on Fresh Air in the mid-90s, Terry, the host of the show, said to him, "So I heard you came out recently. Is it something that you want to discuss?" And he had come out to a few friends, but he didn't think that he was going to be asked about this in a public forum. So, look, he did. He's all the way out, enthusiastically, blissfully, wonderfully, just got married to Jonathan. In the past several days, as a matter of fact, went up to Provincetown, Massachusetts, got married. Jonathan and he have been together for a long time. So amazing to consider the journey of Gary Burton. So when you hear a song like Once Upon a Time from his brand new CD, it just sort of makes sense. Learning to Listen, The Jazz Journey of Gary Burton, is something that you're going to want to read. It's really good reading. It is. And he is right to say that he didn't want anybody else to write it. He wanted to do that himself because he's 70 and he wants the honesty of what his path has been, and nobody can tell that better than him. Love the man, and I appreciate the fact that he spent so much time with us. Listen, I got to tell you about this show on Thursday. Michael Austin, who has been with us before, and Thelgen Allen, who has been with us before, are going to be on together. They are working together to uplift the community, as it were. They're going to have a big jazz show that's happening on September the 13th. Craig Alston will be a part of this, and Tim Green will be the star, basically, of the show. So Thelgen on trumpet, Michael on vocals will be here to talk about it and what work they do in the community. And we might have some surprises for you, but we'll have some astounding music. And I'm happy to say that I'll be introducing Tim Green on the stage that night at this very special live jazz show. So we'll have a great time. Daoud's outro music. We rarely get a chance to play it these days, but we are today. Thanks to everybody in the chat room. Ray Mack, IAF, woohoo! Independent artist, woohoo! The festival is coming your way. Thanks, Ray, for hanging out in the chat room. And Griselda and Beach and Yolanda and the guests who have been passing back and forth today. And I know Art's listening somewhere in Virginia. God bless. Woo, we're gonna have some good shows coming up in the month of September, by the way. They're redoing the rescheduling of Nevo Dew, Shannon Kennedy, and UNAM. They will be back. Very graciously, they consented to that. Carl Filippiak will be with us. He's got a new CD. Chuck Loeb will be with us in the later part of the month. And, man, the joint is really jumping. Thanks so much for your support. Again, thanks to Beej and Yolanda and Grizz and Ray and everybody else who's been passing back and forth. And Micah Chevalier, who's got a couple of gigs this week and coming up. She is a busy, busy gal under new management. I love it. We'll see you next time on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Bye-bye.